guys. Welcome back to my Flickers of Fear show. Now we're going back to the 1970s for this one and going back to talking about some British horror. Now this is a movie that I saw as a kid and I remembered the title and I remembered like the particular monster and the way he kind of like regenerates, making like a big impact on me, like the image of it like stuck in my head. So when I was scrolling through Tubi or Amazon Prime or whatever, this is on both platforms for free, I was like, oh man, I have to put this one on the list because I remember really digging this movie. I thought it was a Hammer movie, it's not, but I'll get into that in a little bit. This is The Creeping Flesh. This actually came out on New Year's Day of 1973. Now, interestingly, as I said, this comes off very much like a Hammer movie, although it's more, it's set in the Victorian era, like late 19th century, but it's much more of like a sci-fi type of story, but it also has like a monster movie type of element as well. So it's more sci-fi, like more Frankenstein, I guess, than, you know, more a gothic Dracula type of story. So this was actually from Tygon, which if you'll recall, me and Tom talked about Witchfinder General with Vincent Price. That was also a Tygon production. But the guy that directed this, Freddie Francis, who's very well known in horror circles and in just film circles in general, he was the one that directed this. Now, interestingly, he had worked for both Hammer before and for Amicus. He actually directed, for Hammer, he did Dracula's Risen from the Grave in 1968. He did The Evil of Frankenstein from 1964 and a couple of other ones. And then he went to work for Amicus in the late 60s, early 70s as well. He did Tales from the Crypt from 1972, the anthology movie, which is also on my list because I really, really like that movie. He also did Torture Garden, Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, a bunch of other ones. And then later on, like going into the 80s, he started working as a cinematographer with David Lynch. He did The Elephant Man, he did Dune, he did The Straight Story, and he also, I believe, won an Academy Award for the movie Glory from 1989. So like I said, you know, very well-respected dude, and he's the one that directed this movie, The Creeping Flesh. Now, the awesome thing about this, and I think the reason why a lot of people misperceive it maybe as a Hammer film, is because it stars those two titans of British horror, Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. And the interesting thing about this is that, I mean, I know Christopher Lee like plays a villain a lot, and he's kind of a villain in this one, but Peter Cushing's character, he's kind of a little bit, I don't know, it's kind of like they're playing with the typecasting. Like, he's sort of playing against type, but not. It's almost kind of like they're subverting, like, the regular role that he plays. So it's, like, a really interesting, I just, like, I don't know, I just really, really like the plot of this, and I just think it's, like, a really interesting story. So what we have, Peter Cushing, he plays a professor named Emmanuel Hildern. And this is kind of set, like I said, in the late, like, in the 1890s, somewhere around there. Now, he has apparently, he's kind of like telling this story to somebody. It's like a little, he's telling the story. He comes back from an expedition and he's telling everybody kind of what he found on this expedition, and he's like super jazzed about it. So what he's found, he was in New Guinea in 1894, and he had found this really big humanoid skeleton, which, I mean, like way bigger than a person. And the fact that it was like older than a Neanderthal, but like more advanced than a Neanderthal, and he'd never seen anything like it. Like, actually, I really like the look of the skeleton in this. Like, it doesn't really look like a human, or, and it doesn't really look like an ape, but then it kind of, I don't know, it kind of like suggests that, but it's just like really, and it's like I said, it's really, really big. So he finds this and he's just like, you know, this is gonna, all of our theories about evolution is gonna like put him on its head and everything, because this one's like so much more advanced. So he's kind of hoping to get this thing called the Richter Prize, which I don't know if that's a real thing or not. It's 10,000 pounds. And, you know, I guess scientists are like competing for it, like for best research that year or whatever. So he's like super jazzed about this. Another thing too is that it's not only that this skeleton is way more advanced than Neanderthal and much bigger, even though it's older. Also, it has this thing where it's implied that it's sort of this, what they had thought was like a mythological being that like represented evil. And it was just like these giants that had been buried in the earth and that were like woken up by rain and stuff. So I'll get into that in a little bit too. But so he comes back to England with the skeleton, and his house in the, you know, in the meanwhile, while he's been gone, his household has been run by his daughter, Penelope, who is a grown woman, but who he's real super protective of. Like, he, basically, he's been gone a year, and he was just like, hey, can you, like, not leave the house? Thanks. You know what I mean? Because he, well, they kind of get into, and like I said, it's kind of interesting because this goes a lot into, it's not, like, super blatant about it, but it does kind of go into a little bit of a subtext about maybe, like, the repression of Victorian women, like, how they were just expected to stay home and not go out and engage with things, and how, you know, men try to protect them from the realities of the world and things like that. There's a lot of that going on in this. So Penelope has been taking care of the household in his absence, but because he was so enthralled in his work in New Guinea, he like forgot to send them any money or forgot to like sort out, and she's had to like, you know, fire some of their servants in the interim. I was trying to skimp, you know, scrimp and save to keep the household together while he was gone, because he didn't really think to take care of all that before he left. Now, again, he comes back and it's like, he doesn't seem like a bad guy. He just seems like he's so into his work that he doesn't really have a lot of time for family or anything. Cause Penelope is like, hey, you know, you've been gone a year. Why don't you come have breakfast with me? And he's just like, yeah, yeah, whatever. I'll just, you know, and like I said, not mean spirited, but he's just kind of like so wrapped up in his scientific, you know, discovery. And he's really excited about it. Now, as soon as he gets back, his half brother, James, who's played by Christopher Lee, Christopher Lee's character runs a mental asylum, and he contacts Peter Cushing's character, Professor Hildern, who we'll just call Emmanuel, contacts him and said, oh, hey, by the way, your wife, who has been in this asylum for a very long time, has passed away. Now, this is interesting too, because so the wife had been in the asylum for, I can't even remember how long it was, I guess since Penelope was a kid. Emmanuel had told his daughter Penelope that his mom had died, that her mom had died like a long time ago, but actually she'd been in the asylum because he was, like I said, he was trying to protect her. Also, it kind of comes to light that he thinks that the mental illness that his wife was displaying is maybe hereditary. And so he thought that maybe keeping it from Penelope would keep her from going Looney Tunes, just like the wife did. So it's just a bad situation all around. So now Emmanuel has had to deal with the fact, he's like, well, you know, I've been telling Penelope she was dead this whole time, but actually she was in an asylum. So he's trying to like keep that under wraps or whatever. Now, interestingly, James, Christopher Lee's character, like I said, these two are half brothers. So there's a lot of tension between them, because not only does James run the asylum where this wife has been and has tried to keep it a secret, but turns out that he's the one with most of the money, and he's the one that's been funding Emmanuel's expeditions. And at this point, he's like, hey, while you were gone, I wrote a paper about your wife's mental illness, and I'm going to submit that for the Richter Prize, which is the same prize that Emmanuel's going for. So he's like, oh, and basically, by the way, I'm not going to pay for your expeditions anymore, because I'm going to go for the Richter Prize and get some money. And, you know, you've always been overshadowing me your whole life with all your scientific discoveries, so that's gonna stop. So there's this whole situation going on. Now, obviously, Emmanuel's pretty bummed out about this, but he goes back and kind of dives into his work like usual, and finds out through and just a random accident that this skeleton that he has brought back from New Guinea, if you spill water on it, it starts to grow skin. You know, just kind of regenerating, and what is actually a very, very cool effect. So he gets, you know, pretty excited about this, as you would. And the funniest part about this, and this is something that I remembered, like, from when I was seeing this when I was a kid. I think I saw it on, like, TBS or something. So he spills water, like, initially on the giant's finger, and it grows, you know, skin and, like, flesh and everything. And actually, what a really cool effect. It's, like, stop motion, or it's, like, wax melting, and they run it in reverse or whatever. So they do that, and so he pretty much chisels the finger off and like puts it in, you know, solution or whatever to preserve it. And it looks just like a really realistic dildo. It's like just the size and everything, because it's a giant. So his finger is like, a big dick size. So it's just like, it just amused me when I was like watching it. I was just like, cause I'm apparently 12 years old. So I just thought that was really funny. But when he looks at this thing's cells that it has generated, he basically finds out, or figures out somehow, that essentially, this creature is like pure evil. It's like organic evil, right? So it's got these things in its blood that look kind of like little spider things or whatever. And he determines that these things that are in its blood are the essence of evil. And so since he figures this out, he, you know, figures that, oh, well, if that's actually evil, then I can make a vaccine against evil and I will, you know, I'll get all the Nobel Prizes and all the prizes ever because I will eradicate evil on the earth because you can cure it like a disease. So he starts working on it. So he starts like working on something that will eradicate these evil cells, essentially, that are in this being's bloodstream. And so he starts experimenting on a monkey, poor little monkey in this movie. He just looks like, please get me out of this movie. Like, it's a poor little face. But yeah, so he injects the monkey with this serum that he's developing, and it seems like it's going pretty good. Meanwhile, Penelope, the daughter, has discovered by going through her dad's stuff, and I can't remember like why she started doing it. It's like, I don't know why she waited until he got back. So I don't know. I think she found a letter or something like that that said something about her mom being in the asylum or whatever. So she basically like busts into her dad's study or into her mom's old bedroom, which she's never been allowed to go into. Like, you know, Emmanuel kept it locked up, like just as it was when his wife died or whatever. So Penelope busts in there and she's like, what the fuck? Like, my mom's been alive this whole time. My dad's been lying to me. So they have this massive, massive argument. And then this kind of kills me. And this is what I'm saying, where it's kind of like Peter Cushing's character, Emmanuel, even though he seems like a good guy, like he just mostly seems like an absent-minded professor type of dude. He doesn't seem like mean-spirited. He just seems like he's so wrapped up in his own work and his own thoughts that he doesn't have a lot of time for other people. Like I said, he's not being, you know, cruel about it. He's just not really thinking about it. He's not in that headspace. But at this point, when his daughter gets justifiably upset that he's been lying to her about her mom being dead this entire time, like she thought, you know, my mom's been dead since I was a kid, but really the mom's been alive the whole time. She was just in an asylum. So she gets understandably upset about that, which Emmanuel interprets as, oh shit, Penelope is now developing the same mental illness as my wife had, just as I feared, which is very funny. And like I said, you know, a show that we did a couple weeks back about women and mental health, this kind of ties right into that whole Victorian era. Anytime a woman gets like upset or angry or something like about that, they think that it's like a sign of mental illness, even though, like I said, she had every reason to be mad at her dad for lying to her entire life. But he's like, well, yeah, she must be flipping out. So he gets the idea, even though he has only tested this anti-evil serum on one monkey, he's like, well, I'm gonna inject Penelope with it, like without her knowledge, like while she's sleeping, and that will protect her, like, she, you know, from evil. It will protect her from going crazy, you know, and so that's why he's doing it. So like I said, his intentions are good, but it's clearly an idiotic thing to be doing, like when you just have no idea what exactly you're doing. But he's so blinded by wanting to protect her, which, like I said, understandable, but has disastrous consequences, obviously. So he injects her and he's like, okay, that'll protect her forever. And then turns out the next day that, oops, the monkey that they injected with the serum previously, Not so cool after all. He pretty much like flips his shit, tears the whole fucking lab up, and everything like that. So not too long after that, Penelope also leaves the house and basically starts going on a little bit of a rampage, putting on one of her mom's red dresses. Her mom was like a burlesque type dancer type thing, and she had like this red dress. She was in show business, you know, she was a dancer. So she puts on her mom's red dress, starts going out to all these kind of like, you know, divey taverns, fucking around drinking, and, you know, guys like start hitting on her and she starts like basically like fucking them up, like, you know what I mean, like cutting their throats and whatnot. So, you know, obviously the cops start going after this woman who's going around wreaking havoc at these taverns around the city. Meanwhile, too, there is also from the asylum that Christopher Lee's character, James, runs, this big bald dude like escapes. He was like the worst dude ever. And the two of them kind of end up in the same place while they're hiding out from the cops, and Penelope ends up killing him. So she gets taken into custody, at which point she's taken to the asylum, and Christopher Lee, doing a blood test on her, because he knows who it is, obviously, because it's like his niece, half-niece, I guess. You know, he takes a blood test, and then he's like, oh shit, looks like Emmanuel injected her with this serum, and it's like he's experimenting on her, and that's going to be like really scandalous if I tell everybody about it. So now he's kind of got some shit on Emmanuel. So basically he's like, well, my experiments aren't really going anywhere, and I still really do want that Richter prize and that 10,000 pounds that comes with it. So he's like, I'm just going to like Kype Emmanuel's research. So he sends one of his henchmen out to steal the skeleton, and he puts Penelope in the mental asylum. He's like, we're going to work on this shit over here. So like I said, there's no good guys in this, really, except for like Penelope, who's just kind of like a victim of circumstance, pretty much, and the monkey. The monkey's also a good guy who's also a victim of circumstance. So now, because James's henchman, he goes to steal the skeleton, but he doesn't know that water regenerates its flesh. And since it's England, they carry it out and it starts to rain. And so the monster, the skeleton, basically regenerates a whole body and starts going again on a little bit of a rampage. At which point, like I said, it's kind of like a monster movie, but the monster movie aspect doesn't really come into it until the very, very end. The monster in this is actually quite cool. It doesn't look like, I'm hard pressed to like think of what it might, it looks like it's made of like paper mache or wax or something, but it's still, there's still something kind of creepy and eerie about it. It almost has, it has like these big eye holes, and then it, the muzzle of it almost kind of looks like an animal, but I can't really figure out what type of animal it is. And it's big, and it's like wearing this big cloak that they had on it to try to like hide it while they were stealing it. So basically it's like, it's going on a rampage, whatever. Now Emmanuel, while all of this is going on, and he's not really super aware of it, but he comes back home and he's like, oh my God, the skeleton's gone. And then he sees that the finger that he had actually previously thrown into the fire, because it's, well, it's moving, and he starts throwing it into the fire because he freaks out. And then at which point, like, the monster comes there and is like, hey, where's that finger? I kind of need that. And then like, he's like, you know, and you know, so the monster's like, well, I'm just gonna take your finger then, but he leaves him alive. Now, interestingly, this has a kind of a twist ending, which a lot of people don't like, but I thought it was kind of cool because, like I said, and this is kind of going back to what I was saying before about this being a little bit, I don't know how much of a departure it is or how much like playing against type it is, but I really like that they kind of did this, because at the very end, you know, all of this crazy shit has gone on with this like regenerating giant skeleton or whatever. And, you know, Penelope like losing her shit and like killing multiple people because of this serum and all this other kind of stuff. But it turns out, like, there's a scene at the very end where you're led to believe that Emmanuel, Peter Cushing's character, was maybe crazy this whole time and just made up this whole story. Because at the end, there's a scene in the mental asylum that Christopher Lee's character, James, owns. And basically, Emmanuel is in a cell, and at first it looks like a laboratory, like there's all this like laboratory mad scientist kind of equipment in there, but then when they cut away and then they cut back, it's empty. And James is like explaining to somebody else, he's like, yeah, he's been like this for a long time. It's like he thinks he's a scientist, he thinks he's doing this, that, and the other. He thinks this other woman that's a patient there is his daughter. He thinks I'm his brother. You know, he's like, so it's very common for all of these patients in here to kind of like fixate on me because I'm like an authority figure and all this other kind of stuff. So at the end, like I said, I don't know, like, I know some people didn't really like the ending because they thought it like negated the whole movie, like, oh, it was all a dream. Like, not necessarily, but it was all like the rantings of a madman. But then the thing about it is that they kind of leave it ambiguous, where it could be that Emmanuel was put into the mental asylum after the events of the movie, like that really happened, but now James is trying to like cover his own ass by like telling everybody, hey, I don't know any of these people, and he's just making shit up. He's just a crazy person. So it could like go either way. But honestly, I really, really kind of liked that ending. Like I said, I like ambiguous endings, and I don't think it takes anything away from the movie as a whole, it being, you know, it could have happened, it could have not happened. I don't know. I really like that anyway. But yeah, this one, I feel like this movie, I liked it much better because I remember liking it when I was a kid. I saw this probably like 30 years ago at least, or more. No, it was I'm sure it was probably like even longer ago than that. I was probably like 10 years old, which is way more than 30 years ago. So yeah, so I remembered seeing it. And like I said, the title had really stuck with me, and a lot of images, particularly the images of like the monster's face and like the finger, that the finger dick and all that, it really kind of like stuck with me. And the idea of the skin like regenerating over these big giant bones, the idea of evil being like a virus that you could, or like a disease that you could inoculate people against, really cool idea. So I really liked revisiting this one because it was like way better, and there was a lot more going on in it than I remembered. Like I said, it's almost kind of like, it kind of delves into the, you know, the whole, the meaning of evil thing. And it delves into like, you know, the state of, you know, women in Victorian England, like the whole like mental asylum thing. And I just really, really liked that sci-fi aspect of it. And I really like kind of the, but I don't want to go so far as to say like social commentary, because it's not really that, it's more like a subtext, but I had forgotten, you know, or I didn't even realize that all of that stuff was in there. So it's like, it was really cool to revisit it. Like I said, if you're really into like Hammer movies or Amicus or, you know, British horror from this time period, I feel like this one really kind of gets swept under the rug a lot. I even looked on YouTube for other reviews of it. I found like maybe two other reviews of it that were like really short. They were like 5 or 6 minutes long. And I was like, that's really a shame, because I mean, You would think, even though this is Tigon, but like I said, Witchfinder General is Tigon too, and that one is a lot more well-known, I feel like, even though this movie is nothing like that. But I just feel like any movie that is like a sci-fi monster movie that has Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee in it, you'd think would actually have more attention or get more people talking about it, especially one is like actually quite cool as this one. Like I said, one with like a lot of really cool ideas, a lot of stuff going on in there. It's not a perfect movie, you know, nothing is, like, you know, a little parts of it are kind of slow and stuff, but honestly, it didn't really bother me. I really liked the look of the monster. There was like some really great creepy shots, you know, of this big, huge monster that looked like a, I don't even know what the hell. It looked like no other monster. It almost looked like a little bit misshapen, or almost kind of like a melted candle type of, or like somebody that was making a wax sculpture that wasn't a very good sculptor. It kind of looked like that. That's pretty much what I'm driving at. But yeah, so I just really like the look of the monster and the whole idea of it. So like I said, if you really like Hammer or Amicus or something like that, and you haven't really seen this one, because like I said, I feel like it's a little bit underrated, a little not talked about all that much, and people maybe forgot about it, then definitely go check this one out, you know, one afternoon. It's like a really cool, it's a cool little flick. I just really, really like Christopher Lee being like this very stern kind of, he's kind of a stern jerk type of character, and Peter Cushing being like the absent-minded professor who also might be a crazy person. It's seeing the two of them together is always a good time. And so yeah, I really dig this movie, and you know, I feel like it doesn't get talked about. So everybody go watch it and like let me know what you think about it. Like I said, it's on Tubi for free. It's on Amazon Prime too, although I can't remember if it's free or if it's not. If it's not free, it's like cheap. It's for like $2.99 or something like that. But they have it on Tubi for free if you want to watch it and you don't have Amazon Prime. So definitely go check it out and let me know what you think about it in the comments. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.